This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So we're going back to Sheffield and going back to Yorkshire, and despite it sort of being a step down in the league, it didn't feel like a step down, which is why I sort of chose Sheffield United over exploring the Championship options. I were away that summer on holiday with Billy Sharp as well, so me and him were both talking, calls going backwards and forwards with Adkins while we were away, and we were buzzing to be signing together. It's like, I was going through some quite serious financial issues when I was at Sheffield United. I literally just got a text over the summer saying you're on the transfer list, and that was sort of Wilder had taken over, and I just got a text from him. That's all it said. But there was a couple of bad eggs in there as well.
This is the Sheffield United Way podcast with In Good Nick and Hal Stewart.
Our next guest could operate on the left of midfield or defence, through the middle and even up front. He came into the game the hard way, plying his trade in the non-league while studying and working on a building site, but going on to represent England at sea level, then forging a professional career, taking him through the leagues to the heights of the Championship. He played for the Blades during the 2015-16 season. Martin Wolford, welcome to the Sheffield United Way.
Thank you very much, Hal. Nice little intro there. And hiya, Nick. How are we doing?
Yeah, very, very good. Thank you, mate. And most people that we interview on here have finished their career, but you haven't yet, have you?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's up in the air. I was still playing part-time, but the level that I was at, it just got ended due to COVID. So I'm on the fence. It's a tough decision, to be honest. It's a lot tougher than I was kind of expecting to let go. I've got other things going off in the background that I'm passionate about and focusing on. So I thought it was going to be a little bit easier to let go, but it's been a huge part of my life. So I'm not sure is the answer to that, and I'll see what's there come next season. I made the decision to go part time when I could have still stayed in a full time game, but the club in particular that were interested, among a couple of others, were miles away. And I'm at the stage of my career. I've got two young girls now. I'm not with their mum, so it would have meant me moving away on my own, and I just weren't in the headspace to do that. So I chose to go part time, and I enjoyed it for the most part. The only downside to going part time is it takes up all your time, basically, because I'm now focusing on my business through the day. I have my girls four nights a week. I train the other two nights and then play on a Saturday. So it just got a lot as well at the same time. So, but having said that, I enjoyed the football. And as I say, I'm very, very undecided of what I'm going to do from here.
It is something to consider, especially when you do think that you came into the game in such a different way and later, of course, than some people. Tell us about how you did first get into football, because it wasn't the tried and tested path of many.
No, I came from non-league, is a long story short. I went on trials when I was younger, local clubs such as Doncaster, Barnsley, amongst a host of others as a childhood growing up. And I just kept getting knocked back. There were a few little bit of bad luck in some instances, badly timed injuries and stuff like that. And then there was some where I just sort of just didn't perform on the trials for whatever reason. And yeah, I mean, I'd gone, I'd left school, I'd been to college, and I'd started working. I were actually a land surveyor working on a building site, as you mentioned there. And I was just playing part-time, sort of semi-pro. But when you say semi-pro, it was kind of like, back then it was like 50 quid a week, and I were absolutely buzzing off that. I came from there and I went on a trial, right? I think I was 19 when I signed for York, but even right up to just before then, I went on a trial for Stockport, who were in League Two at the time. And even then, I got another no. They took me to Ibiza on pre-season tour as the trial. And again, it was just another no. So I kind of went back to Frickley Athletic that I was playing at the time and thought that was that. And then York City came in really, really late for me. And from there, I'm forever grateful for that. I know you're a big York City fan, Hal, so... I'm really, really grateful for York because everyone else would just say no. And like I said, for one reason or another, it was just no after no after no. So it gets tough to take as a kid growing up. And I'd sort of got my head around football not being the path for me. And York sort of changed that direction for me.
Before we carry on talking about York, and I'll leave you to it after that. you were studying for a degree in civil engineering, is that right?
Yeah, it was, yeah, yeah. It was part-time. One day a week, I was going to uni as part of the job that I were in. And when I signed for York, they were offering me the same money as I was getting paid in a much more secure sort of career path. So I said, obviously, look, I want to play football, but you're going to have to let me have Thursdays off every week because I need another year before I get any kind of qualification. And again, York were more than willing to do that, and for the first year I missed every Thursday training session, so I was working my way towards the HND, which is sort of two-thirds of the degree, but at least at that point I could have picked it back up later if football would have not worked out.
Have you decided to pick that back up at any point since?
I haven't, you know, and I keep saying maybe I will, but at the minute I am sort of in a similar field. I've got a property business that I'm pushing now, so it possibly would come in handy, but I don't know whether I'll need it or not is another thing, so I'll just see. At the minute, I'm not intending on it, even though I said sort of throughout my career I might as well pick it back up while the PFA will help towards that, but at the minute I don't feel I need it, so no.
You mentioned that while you were at uni, you worked on a building site. Do you feel, as you think back to that now, that it gave you, or even did you think this at the time, it gave you a greater appreciation for the professional football life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I went into York, I kind of put everybody else on a pedestal above me anyway, because I'm like, I'm this non-league player, these are professional. Although York were in the conference, so still technically, but I was sort of a part-time player and these were professionals. So I kind of put everybody on a pedestal above me anyway. And the fact that I had to give up a job, I'd not sort of come through the ranks of football. I had to sacrifice something to go and do it. It was kind of like, well, I'm going to make sure this works now. And the only way that I knew how to do that was just work the hardest. And that's all I did at York. And then through the clubs as I went, it was just sort of the philosophy, what if I work the hardest, eventually I'll become one of the best, and it served me very well.
I remember Billy McEwen, who was then York City manager, and you mentioned I'm a big York fan. I just want to make this very clear for people watching the Sheffield United Way. I'm a Sheffield United fan, but I grew up in York. I lived in the area. I went to Bootham School, Martin. So, I mean, I was literally right next to Bootham Crescent. We used to go in half price at half time. And so I watched York as a child a lot more than the Blades, largely because when you're at a school like that, you have school on a Saturday, right? So I couldn't get usually by the time school finished to Bramall Lane in time for a 3 o'clock kickoff, but I could get for the second half of a York game. So I used to watch a lot of York when I was a young lad, and I was at York Sixth Form College as well. And that was the sort of time just after that when you signed. So I was still in the area. And I remember Billy McEwen being fairly hesitant to throw you in initially, but every time I saw you play for York, I thought you were ready. So talk me through the initial time at Bootham Crescent and then how it all eventually started clicking, because it really did.
I mean, initially, like you say, I can remember coming on for my debut off the bench and got a few minutes and did really well. And then I think, I'm not sure if it was the following game, my very first start, I actually scored and sort of then it felt like, right, I'm pushing for a place. I can't remember the circumstances why I got the start, whether someone were injured. But I remember the next game then, I did get a start and someone got sent off. It was the goalkeeper got sent off after about 10 minutes, and I was sort of the sacrificial lamb that took the that had to get subbed off, and I were absolutely devastated there, thinking just because of what had happened sort of growing up and being rejected, I'm sort of putting all this pressure on myself. I'm kind of even then just thinking, even though I'd got a contract, I was kind of thinking, oh, I've missed my chance now, that's it, that's sort of thing. So I can remember like sort of getting the head down about that. But it weren't too long after that, then I got back in the team and sort of things started to be more sort of regular, secure my place. And yeah, from there, I went on to do really, really well, which is really, really pleasing, because I do owe York a lot, an awful lot. Like I say, I did a podcast for them recently and I sort of made it very clear that I owe them pretty much everything for my career, to be honest, because without them taking that punt on me, I wouldn't have gone on to have a half-decent career like I did.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely did. Before we get on to talking about the 2009 League One final, Scunny, how did that come about?
So I was doing really well for York, as we just discussed there, and naturally Cheltenham came in for me, and I went down there, and it was looking like signing for them. They were League Two at the time. And again, I was absolutely delighted. I mean, I was just thinking, right, I'm getting league football this time. So it's another sort of huge step and a huge marker for me. But what I didn't know, I'm oblivious to the fact that York was, Scunthorpe had their eye on me throughout the season, that were doing really, really well. And having spoken to Nigel, who it was who signed me back then initially, he made it clear that they weren't going to make the move then. They were sort of letting me see how I progressed at York for another 6 months to a year. They just still wanted me to continue developing and still getting the games. But the fact that Cheltenham came in, it forced their hand. And I can remember then just meeting up with Nigel and Andy Crosby in a service station and having a good chat. And from there, it weren't long after till I signed. That season, I signed the start of the season, and then we got promoted at the end. So it was sort of a whirlwind. A few years, including York, but in particular a year going from there, because I went from non-league, I went from York in the conference to League One, which in itself was a huge jump and something that we're obviously delighted with. And then from there to get promoted to the Championship, it just all happened so fast. The memories of that season just sort of it just seemed to go past in the blink of an eye. We did really well. Like the good thing about Scunny, we were always the underdogs. We had a small squad. It kind of picked itself, but there were some sort of competition for places at the same time. And yeah, we were just the underdogs, and we went. And I can remember sneaking into the playoffs. And I mean sneak. We were losing the final game of the season. Which meant we were out of the playoffs, which meant we weren't making it. And one of the lads, Cliff Burns, scored a last-minute header to get us that draw, that point got us into the playoffs. So even going into the playoffs, we were still massively the underdogs. We were sort of miles behind the sort of top of the playoffs. So no one expected us to go anywhere, but we just used that to our advantage, and we were just sort of, yeah, riding the wave, really, to be honest. And to finish there in that stadium, I mean, for me, like, nothing could compare, especially that sort of, as I say, the few years that led up to that. I'd gone from building site to scoring the winner at Wembley. It doesn't happen. I were on cloud nine.
That's magic. It's just amazing. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't write it. And if you did, no one would believe it. Absolutely incredible. And of course, Bristol City, Millwall, you know, good clubs. And then we'll get to our team, Sheffield United, in 2015. So how did that move come about, Martin?
I knew I was leaving Millwall. I'd served my time there, my contracts were up, and I still had a bit of interest from the Championship. Sheffield United were interested when Clough was still there. And Sheffield United for me is a club that I obviously, growing up relatively local, I'm looking at the club and I'm thinking, one, it gets me home, which I've been away from sort of friends and family for quite some time. Two, for me, the main thing, I'm looking at the club and I knew the club had it in it to do what it did. Unfortunately, it was after I'd left, but I knew it always had the potential to do that, and I wanted to be a part of that. Clough left that summer. So I'm kind of thinking, right, well, that's kind of deal off, and I need to look at other things. And then it just happened to be Adkins that took over, and sort of having known him from York and having sort of success under him at Scunthorpe. And then seeing sort of what he did at Southampton, it seemed like the perfect sort of comparison. And I'm thinking, right, I want to be a part of that. I were away that summer on holiday with Billy Sharp as well. So me and him were both talking and sort of calls going backwards and forwards with Adkins while we were away. And we were buzzing to be signing together because we're mates and we were before that friends through other teammates. So, I mean, we were buzzing and I were looking at it thinking, this is the perfect move for me. Like I say, it gets me back home to my family and to be joining such a great club with huge, huge potential. It happened. It just didn't happen when I were there. But I could see that and you could always see that. You could see that sort of Sheffield United had been this sort of sleeping giant for a few frustrating years in League One. And it were only a matter of time. It was just sort of bad timing and it didn't work out. But I'd like to look back of that. There's a lot of good memories come out of that for a start. There's some things that I'll touch on in a minute. But I can remember like it was yesterday, signing and going around and walking around the stadium. And it was as much of a deal for me as it was any of the other clubs. And like I said, there's been sort of there were Millwall in there in Championship, Bristol City, which is a big club. So to be going back to Sheffield and going back to Yorkshire, and despite it sort of being a step down in league, it didn't feel like a step down, which is why I sort of chose Sheffield United over exploring the Championship options.
That's some very good stuff that you just said about Sheffield United. So a lot of Sheffield United fans are going to be very, very happy with what you've said. But looking back on your time at Bramall Lane, how did you see it go? Obviously, it wasn't the most successful of seasons for the club. How did you see your time at Bramall Lane?
Frustrating and disappointing, to name just a few. I signed late in pre-season, and the frustrating thing for me there was is that I kind of knew it were happening for a while. I knew it were happening before the team went back for pre-season, and it was a few weeks after that when I finally got the deal done. That couple of weeks I'd underestimated. It was the first time where I'd not had a proper pre-season, like right from the beginning, and I think I struggled from that to start with. I was behind the lads in terms of pace. And being up to speed. And to be honest, I struggled to catch up. And before you know it in pre-season, especially when you've missed two or three weeks at the start, before you know it, the season's here and I weren't quite ready. And do you know what? That is down to me, because I looking back now, I should have done more to make sure I was ready going into the season. And then kind of once the season started, it was kind of like I was chasing my tail a little bit. I'd been dragged at half time in the League Cup game, the cup game that before the season starts, and that hit me quite hard actually, because I always think that's a tough it's a bit of a harsh thing to do to a player. I always said if I went into management, I'd at least give it 5 or 10 minutes into the second half just to let somebody kind of prove themselves. But the thing is, when you're not up to the pace, like the first thing that goes if you're not fit enough is your brain. It's not even your legs, it's your thing. So you start making tired decisions, and that's what I was doing right from the off at Sheffield United. The more you start, the more you do that, the harder you're trying, but then the more the decision making goes out the window, and the more you continue to make bad decisions. So it would always scramble from the off for me to get up, and then I were in and out of the team. And then it just repeats itself. So when you're going into the team, you're trying that little bit harder. You're trying too hard, and you're not. You're not just sort of playing your game, nice, relaxed, and just playing and enjoying the game. You've got it on your mind all the time. You're thinking, right, I need to prove it. I need to prove it this time. So you're trying, and you overthink things. And as I say, it just becomes that repetitive cycle of trying to prove yourself. You're slightly off with your fitness because you've not had the run of games, and it's a tough position to be in, because you need to go in there and you need to like sort of be one of the best players in order to secure your place, and you know that as a player, but it's quite challenging because you like I say you're slightly behind in fitness, and then you're overthinking it, trying to prove yourself. So it's a really difficult position, and that was the first time I'd really found myself in that position after quite a few years of Because, like I say, even looking back, right back to the York days when I first got here, I did get into the team quite early on, and then I got a run of games. That's kind of everything. It's getting the run of games is hugely important as a player, because you get right up, you don't get to your full match fitness till after a few games. I don't care how hard you work on a training ground, it's not the same tempo as when you're out there playing the game. And it's difficult, it's hard to replicate. And then, as I say, because you're slightly off the pace, you're not performing at your best. So then you don't force your way into the team, and it just keeps going round. That pretty much sums up the whole season for me. And it would get into the end, and I was trying harder and harder just to sort of make up for it. And as I say, the harder you try, the less relaxed you are, and the less like you're actually playing the game.
That makes so much sense. So much sense, because there's been so many players in the past that sign late and then kind of don't start the first game, and then it takes them a few games, come on for as a sub a couple of games, and then eventually you see that they're getting up to the pace. But yeah, I can completely see that. And I don't know about you, Hal, but there's so many similarities there from what Dean Hammond was saying as well.
Spot on. I was about to bring that up. So Martin, Dean kind of summed his time up in very similar ways. I was wondering, did you ever talk to Dean? Because it would have been perhaps interesting if you two had shared how you were feeling inside, because you might have both found a bit of common ground.
Do you know what? You don't open up like that as a player. It's only now that I could probably speak with. If you'd have been asking me at the time, my answer would have probably been clouded, to say the least. Like, I probably would have, like, sort of shirked around that a little bit and... Mm. A manly macho thing, I guess. You're not wanting to admit it to yourself that is the case, that you're struggling a little bit with confidence, that you are struggling a little bit, like to kind of get back to you. You're not feeling yourself on the pitch. You're trying to. It's not an easy thing to sort of admit. And the changing room's sort of a strange place, because you trust the lads with everything, but it's still not a place where you really open up about sort of certain things, like in the way that you should really. But so no, I mean, like, obviously spoke to Dean on, like, on totally different topics and things like that, but never to the point where we'd sort of open up in that way to say, look, I'm struggling here. Like, how are you? you just don't do it, and you should really.
Yeah, I think it would have made a difference, because we now know he was having an awful time and he was very unhappy and he didn't want to let that on to anyone. And he kept it all inside, and it actually really took its toll on him. And we were sad. We were very sad hearing that, because I think as fans, you literally just look at the physical ability of a footballer. You don't ever think about, they might have had a bad night, they might not have got any sleep, they might have problems going on at home, whatever. They might have had a terrible drive getting to the ground. You do not think of any of that. It is literally just, can you do it at 3 o'clock on a Saturday?
Exactly, and one of the things this probably isn't exclusive on a podcast, because I've never opened up about this. Like, I were going through some quite serious financial issues when I were at Sheffield United. As that might surprise you, I can see that on your face there. And yeah, it surprises you. Yeah. But at Fleetwood, it all came out a little bit more down the line. But I just found out that all my savings that I'd put away and give to a financial advisor, he'd lost a lot, like everything. So there were that sort of playing on my mind. And again, back then, I probably wouldn't have admitted that it were affecting me as much as what it was. I were always kind of like, oh, yeah, but like playing the game. If anything, like playing the game helped me take my mind off that. But at the same time, I think, yeah, I probably weren't in the right headspace to be doing things as well. And that's possibly kind of, like you say, I mean, fans in particular, they're just looking at you on the pitch. Is he playing well? No. Like, that's it. That's as black and white as it is. Like, so then you have a run of bad games, and it's like, oh, he's a crap player. Like, you can go from sort of being having a bad game and it's been, oh, all right, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But you start to have a run of bad games, and like I say, when then it drags out to being pretty much a season where I underperform, like, there might have been one or two glimpses in there, but like, even for myself, I'll hold my hand up and say for the majority of the time, I was massively underperforming at Sheffield United. And when it drags out to that long, the fans are in the rights to sort of have their opinion of you as a player. And it's always going to be a bad one, but sort of no one really looks at what's happening sort of behind the scenes. It's just like the rest of life doesn't matter. You are getting paid to play football, so you should be performing. And it's just not the case. Things affect you in different ways, no matter what it is. And the thing is, for me, like, I will always go out there and try my hardest. And that unfortunately for me is what I were doing at Sheffield United. I was trying my hardest at the time. But as I say, when you're sort of slightly off the pace, when you're overthinking things, trying harder sometimes makes it worse. So it's really what a difficult time for me as well at Sheffield United, which really disappointed me. The saving grace for me, I don't know if this is the case with Dean, the saving grace for me is I was back home with friends and family, so I did have that sort of exit. Whereas if that had happened at some of the other clubs, where like Millwall or Bristol, for example, when I was living away from people, like kind of just me and the missus, I had no sort of real escape from anything. Whereas when I were at Sheffield, I had my friends around me, and you can go and take your mind off things. And that's what I think that were the sort of saving grace for me all the time. But it was a really difficult season to take, to be honest. And I came away from that disappointed more than anything with myself having finished the season. But then the disappointing thing for me that weren't my fault after that is because the damage were already been done. Like, I sort of analysed the season and thought, right, well, I put a big part of it down to the slow start that I had and not being ready for pre-season. So I went away that summer and grafted, like the hardest I'd ever grafted in any off-season. And I was just like, right, I'm going to prove a point. Like, I knew the fans had not taken to me. I knew I had a hell of a lot to prove to Sheffield United and the Sheffield United fans. So I'd gone away and thinking, right, I'm going to do that. And the toughest thing to take for me was I literally just got a text over the summer saying, you're on the transfer list. So Wilder had taken over, and I just got a text from him. That's all it said. So I'm like, right. So then you start speaking to your agent and thinking, right, but pre-season were closing in, and it was just a case of, well, you're going to have to just sit it out and wait and see what other options are there. So I thought, right, well, let me just try and change some opinions here. So I went back into training, and unfortunately, Wilder's a Sheffield United fan. I mean, I don't know if that played a part, but I weren't changing his mind. There were no changing his mind whatsoever. He'd made his mind up right from the start. Fortunately for me, initially, Dean Amond was actually on his hit list more than I was. So while he was dealing with that for the first week or so and went back into pre-season, everything were okay and just getting on as normal. But then he got Dean out of the picture, and I must have been the next on the list because pre-season tour came round. I was the only one that just got left behind. Just got made to train with the kids, which I knew happened in the game. But when it's happening to you, when you're not a bad egg, you're not doing anything to disrupt anything, you're just wanting to work hard and better yourself, that again were a really tough thing to take. And then I'm sort of half and half training with the kids as and when. When the lads came back, I'm thinking, right, at least I've got someone to train with now. Things are still not happening. A few things had happened while the club were away. And Oldham had come in for me, but at the time Oldham were struggling financially. So I knew a player that were there that I played with before, and he weren't getting paid. And I'm not in the best financial situation anyway myself. So I'm thinking, I can't go to a club that's not paying its players. But I think that sort of annoyed Wilder even more, to be honest, because he's wanting me out the door, and I'm refusing deals. And for the following week, it was really difficult, to be honest, because I weren't even allowed on the grass, which is frowned upon, to say the least. Like I say, I would try my hardest to get out at this point as well, but it had to be the right thing for me as well. Like that's the other thing that sort of fans don't necessarily see. It's like, you're not just going to go to the first club. Like I say, Oldham were the first one there, and I knew they were struggling. Like, there were uncertainty there, and it just weren't for me. So as I say, to go through all that, eventually, like I say, I did get out and I did go to Fleetwood. But yeah, that period after the summer in particular were a really tough thing for me to take, because the other thing was as well is I'd gone away and grafted all summer, and then I weren't part of any pre-season games. I weren't part of pre-season tour. So I fell behind again because I'm just training with kids or on my own at times again, and it had sort of gone back to where I didn't want to be the season when I signed. So all the hard work sort of got undone, because it's really, really hard to kind of replicate the games and the training that you're doing when you just sort of, like I say, whether you're doing it with kids or whatever, it's just not the same as the first team stuff. So that was the real low point for me, was, like I say, finishing the season disappointed and hard on myself about that, but then felt like I was sort of attacking it in the right way to kind of try and make amends, and then just not to be given any sort of shot that were quite tough, actually. That were quite tough.
That sounds awful, that, as you can see from mine and Hal's lack of saying anything, really. Well, it's hard to hear.
We didn't know any of that was going off in the background, and you just get reports in the press about these players are transfer listed, and then the next thing you hear is they've gone, and you just don't think about any of the mental anguish that's going on. Of course, as you've mentioned, you've got your own issues to think about, personal issues as well as financial issues. You can't just jump at the first club that offers you an opportunity, because it might not be right for you. And I'm just probably thinking you are one of the only people, maybe you and Dean Hammond, that sort of didn't really welcome the return of Chris Wilder like we all did as fans, because he didn't see the best of you. Sheffield United fans didn't see the best of you. And of course, as you mentioned, he's a Sheffield United fan, so he did probably have some of his mates telling him, yeah, this guy didn't do it last season. And I think it's a shame that Chris wasn't sat with me in Bruton Crescent when I saw you score 8 goals that first season. And I know it was League Two, but this was League One, and you'd already done it in the Championship. So I knew, and I'm going to stop just going on, this is not a loving. I felt like, given another chance, you could have done it for Sheffield United and you would have changed opinions. That's how I felt, and I was hoping you were going to come back second season. The main reason was I'd said how good you were and I wanted to look clever.
Well, I mean, for me, like, that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted a chance to prove that, so it hurt just getting a text. Like I say, I know opinions, like, good or bad about Chris Wilder. Like, I'd never met him. I'd never come across him, like, within football prior to that. I'd never heard any stories, good or bad, about how he is as a manager and how he is. So, like I say, when he took over, I had no sort of it was disappointing. It's always disappointing when a manager gets sacked that you've been playing for, because the managers sort of take the brunt of everything that's going on the pitch. So it's always difficult, especially as I say, I'm sure Nigel doesn't get sort of highly regarded at Sheffield United, but I'd had success under Nigel. We got promoted from League One to the Championship with Scunthorpe United. That's not the size of club that Sheffield United is. So I got a really good impression of that. So to see him get sacked anyway was disappointing from a personal point of view. And then, like I say, when the new manager comes in, when Chris Wilder comes in, like I say, it was just a case of, right, okay, then I've got a new manager to a fresh start, and I've just got to prove to him that I'm sort of worthwhile having at the club. As I say, then, for that to see the sign, and then a week or so later, however long it was, just to get a text message before even meeting him, it's kind of like, right, that's disappointing. Okay, it is what it is. I'm on the transfer list, but I'm likely to be going back training, so I just wanted a chance to prove that, and I just never got a chance to prove anything. And in fairness to Chris, like, one of the things that I'd say that Nigel didn't do well at Sheffield was to clear the ranks when he came in. It was a huge squad. It accumulated not just the previous managers, but the previous managers' players. Mm-hmm. And
it's true.
Nigel being Nigel is nice. He's a nice guy. I guess that's where Wilder dealt with that better, was to just be ruthless. But when you're on the other end of that ruthlessness, it's tough to take. And without just getting a shot whatsoever, without getting any preseason games, he gave me one kind of late on when basically it was just a token. Like, I knew I was out the door by that point, and he gave me a few minutes against Barnsley, I think it was, but it had already been set in stone that I were out the door. And like I say, it was just really tough to take, not to get a chance to prove to everybody why I had come from the Championship and why I'd been playing regularly in the Championship prior to that. I wanted to prove that at Sheffield. And as I say, going right back to the start, I always knew that looking at Sheffield United as a club, they always had it in them to do what they've gone and done. And I would have loved to have been a part of that. So yeah, it's disappointing for me that it happened after I was there, but I've no hard feelings about that. It's just disappointment from the sense of not getting to prove that the poor season wasn't me. It was sort of a lesser version of what I could do. So that was kind of the difficult thing for me.
It's interesting you say about Chris Wilder's kind of hit list, because he also, on his hit list, was two other players, which were Paul Coutts and Kieran Freeman as well. They both got transfer listed, but actually got given an opportunity, unlike yourself, and they became kind of recent legends, didn't they, Hal?
Oh, mainstays, yeah.
Maybe they owe a little bit to me for clinging on for as long as I did during pre-season, but no, and you know what? Like that's the thing, because the season that we had, as disappointing as it was, like we had good players, like we all underachieved, like as a team, we underachieved, and then as I say, you've got players there that have gone on to be club legends, and it's great to see. And like I say, I mean, obviously, I would have loved to have been a part of that. But as I say, it happens, and I've only got myself to blame for sort of the poor season that I have. I don't sort of try and make excuses for that. There's things that I could have done, as I say, getting off to a slow start and not sort of realising early enough that it was due to sort of being off the pace slightly. Like I could have gone out there and I could have brought myself up to pace on myself. So there's only myself to blame for that. And like I say, mentally and stuff, everything going off outside the thing, it's down to me to handle that and not let it affect my game. And unfortunately it did. So there's nothing there from me in any kind of animosity or anything like that. There's, of course, a disappointment in the season that I had there. And the only tough thing to take is just that I really, really want to prove myself and didn't get a shot.
It's nice to hear, not nice to hear, but also nice to hear that there are other things that were affected, because like Hal said earlier, you just don't get that. You just don't get that when you're just watching someone for 90 minutes on a football field play their game. You don't see all these things that's going on in their lives. And to be honest, I would have loved to have seen Chris Wilder give you that chance, because I think you would have took it, no doubt about it at all.
I was going to give it everything. I was going to give it my all. That's one thing I had in my head, that I was determined to come back and just give it everything that I'd got. And as I said, I'd done it before in the Championship, so I just wanted to prove that, and I just wanted to show that to people. But I look back now, and as I say, looking at possibly what Nigel should have done when he came in to what Chris did, unfortunately, I was just one of the ones that part of the previous manager's sort of recruitment, and he were wanting to clear the books of that. And I get it. It's part of football. Unfortunately, you're just a commodity, which is one of the sort of downsides in football as a player. You're sometimes not seen as the person. You're seen as literally just the player and the asset. And if you're no longer an asset, then you get moved on. It would just, as well, with it being the first time that I'd really experienced that in my career, it was tough to take.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are you ready for the difficult question, Martin?
Yeah, fire away.
All right, so at the end of that season, the Scunthorpe game, there was what we now refer to as the infamous lap of shame that you all took at the final whistle. I was still there. I don't know, Nick, if you were one of the 2,000 or so that remained inside Bramall Lane. It was, it was toxic, it was hostile. And unfortunately, Martin, at the end of that, it was reported by some that you made the V sign to fans at the end of the season during that lap. Can you tell us what really happened there?
It weren't during the lap. It was, I got subbed about 20 minutes from the end. The 25,000 Sheffield United fans had give it a sarcastic cheer at my removal. And being there, being in front of the Scunthorpe United fans as well, and it definitely weren't the two fingers. It was a thumbs up, and in all honesty, it was a bit of a sarcastic thumbs up in return to the sarcastic cheering that were going off. But it definitely weren't the two fingers. I can hand on heart say that is the case, and that is the honest truth. There was a bit of sarcasm in the thumbs up, and I probably shouldn't have even done that. I regretted it instantly, especially when I got back to my phone and saw my Twitter account absolutely blowing up with abuse from the fans that did think that I'd stuck the twos up. And I can remember after that, we had the end of season do. That just weren't a nice thing to be a part of in itself. After the season that had been there, it's kind of like no one really wanted to be there. It just sort of, we had a team that outranged afterwards. No one really fancied doing that. And I can remember speaking to Andy Crosby afterwards and saying, look, what do I do? Do I put out on Twitter an apology for that and explain that it weren't what it's being perceived as, or what do I do? I was quite distraught, actually, because like I say, I was getting absolute dog's abuse on Twitter after the game. And as I say, instantly regretted sort of reacting in any way, let alone it certainly wasn't the way that it being perceived by the sort of other end of the stadium. But he just said, no, just leave it. It'll die down and just come back next season. And as I say, that was part of the reason leaving after that day, is again, that I'd sort of got the bit between my teeth to sort of, right, I've really got some making up to do here. So that in itself, I do wonder if that in itself had played any part in sort of how I got treated when I came back. I look at it, like I say, I know Wilde's a Sheffield United fan, and if he's been offended by that in the same way that some of the fans didn't think it was what it was, then maybe there might have been something in there. But I can hand on heart say that it weren't two fingers. I would never be that disrespectful as sort of, no matter how disappointed, angry, frustrated I was, it certainly weren't that. It was just the accumulation of the whole season, sarcastically cheered off by your home team when they're making the sub to take you off. It's tough. It's tough. And like I say, it was just a heat of the moment thing, just to sort of, I was just like, oh, cheers.
I don't remember that at all, Nick. Because, I mean, that's why I said I thought it was a lap of honour. And I'm only basing that off what people have told me, because I don't remember it at all. And it was only in doing this research that it came up. And in a way, I'm sorry to bring it back up, because you say Andy Crosby said it'll die down. Here we are 6 years later bringing it back up. But, Nick, do you remember it at all?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. It's not just me. It's not as infamous then, Martin. It's not as infamous as you may feel, because if Nick and I don't recall it, and we were both at that game, and I had to look it up, and someone told me it was during the Lap of Honour, so I apologise. I thought it was, but
yeah. In fairness, there were some fans on Twitter that were saying it was a thumb, because I did. I think I did comment back on something, and as I said, there were one or two in amongst the hundreds of other comments that we're getting. There was like the odd one or two saying, oh, I did actually see a thumb. To be fair, if I'd have put something out on Twitter there, I would have probably sort of shirked around the fact of it, there being any sarcasm in there, and saying, oh, no, it was just thumbs up. But it wasn't. There were a bit of that in there, but it definitely weren't meant in any as disrespectful as sort of the twos. Yeah, the twos would be, but I shouldn't have done it anyway. It was petty. I just reacted to it was just the bubbling up of a whole frustrating season, and to kind of go off there in front of your old club that you're highly regarded in, and you're sort of getting you're getting that from your own fans. It was just a little bit. It was tough, and I just reacted. But I can hand on heart say that it weren't two fingers.
Why did you feel that it didn't work for Sheffield United that season? Not just yourself, I mean everybody, because it wasn't just you. There were a lot of players that kind of didn't perform as we kind of expected.
The only answer I can probably give there is to reference it in terms of my time at Scunny, where, as I said, we had a tight-knit group of players. The starting 11 more or less picked itself, but we had good players there challenging to come in if and when called upon. So there were always sort of competition for places. And I do look at when I came into Sheffield United, the squad was huge. It was kind of a mess of not just the previous manager, but a couple of managers ago that, like, there'd been a turnover of managers, and it kind of, like, in all honesty, it was a little bit of a toxic changing room, because you had sort of that many players, and you get it in every club, don't get me wrong. If players aren't playing, they want to have a moan about it. So it's like, oh, I should be playing, and you get the negativity coming out. And I just think there were too many in and around the changing room, and that purely down to, more than likely, down to just not being playing. But because there were that many players not playing in the changing room, it's kind of like, yeah, the negativity. And because as well that if you've got a couple of young players coming through, you don't usually get from them, because they're quite pleased to be there anyway, and they're pushing, and it's part of their sort of development. But when you've got players that think they deserve to genuinely deserve to be in the team and possibly are good enough. They're the ones that can be more negative. And then as well, like the other thing is, going back to Scunny, is when you get when you're playing with the same players week in, week out, you get the links, you get the bonds all over the pitch, and you get used to what runs certain players make. You know where you're expected to be if other players have got the ball, and you just sort of develop this understanding of where you need to be and what your job role is within that, what to expect from your other teammates. And when there's such a big squad and turnover of players trying to keep everybody happy in and out of the team, it never gels quite as well as what it should. Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of bad eggs in there as well, which were frustrating for me.
Who were the bad eggs?
I knew you were going to say that.
You can't make
me. You don't have to say. I was only joking.
You can tell us after.
Oh. No. You don't have to say it at all. Just give us the initials.
Just give you the surname, that.
Yeah. and the first
actually, one. That goes on to my next question. I was just going to ask, what was the changing room like? Was it a good one? Were there some good guys in there as well?
Yeah. There were some good guys in there. As I say, I signed with Billy, who was obviously a club legend there, and me and him were very close anyway. So we would always sort of. We were always roommates on away trips, so I'd sort of build that relationship anyway. I had that there. There were a couple of players that I'd already played with. I'd already played with Brayford and a few of the others. So that were already there. So you did, yeah. You had some really good. You had the makings of a really good team in there. As I say, it was just a bit stretched. Because, like I said, there was a couple of bad eggs in there, and like you say, once it gets to that sort of the negativity in a changing room, it's contagious. It's like when things are going well, and that's probably why sort of teams go sort of and get back to back promotions, because if you've got the positive, you've got the momentum, and you're keeping that going, then it doesn't faze you. You're coming up against, but. When the negativity is creeping into the changing room, it brings everybody down. And there were just too many. Probably had a case that ability-wise, that there might have been a case for them to fit into the team somehow. But when you're not, it's easy to just point fingers and blame other people, blame other players, blame the manager, blame this, that, the other, whatever your excuse is. But it just never does any good for the team. And there were quite a lot of that when I first came. And as I say, I think like I say, in fairness to Wilder, that is what Nigel should have done is cleared some of the ones out that were never going to be part of his team, rather than trying to keep too many players happy. You keep your main ones happy and let the other ones go. And yeah, I think that played a big part for me. I'd be interested to know what Dean Hammond said on that question.
You have to watch the podcast, subscribe to the Sheffield United Way. Don't forget to hit that bell as well, and you get notifications. You can even become a paid-up member.
Yeah, I love that. I'll definitely do that and give it a listen.
I'm going to put it out there. I am assuming that Chris Wilder was not the manager that you enjoy playing for the most. So which manager is it?
To take the Sheffield United season out of there, and Adkins would have been up there, because, like I say, I'd had huge success out of him, and like I say, from how the chain of events of my career went for going from part time football to York as the first full time club, and then jumping up into League One, and then in that very first season getting promoted to the Championship, I've got to have huge admiration and again thanks for the manager at that, because he signed me from the Conference into League One, and then got us promoted, which again played a big part in. And and yeah, there's sort of, he's got to be up there for me for that. But I, the frustrations were there for me within the Sheffield United year as well. So, but I have got huge admiration for Nigel and what he did for me personally in my career. And then the other one that I possibly say, and this doesn't go down well with the Millwall fans, to be honest, but I really, really enjoy playing under Ian Holloway. For a number of different reasons. One is mad as a box of frogs, so it would just an absolute banter on the training ground. Such an enjoyable place to be. But two, like, I really enjoyed the style of play that he played. He changed me as a footballer at Millwall there. I became more of a ball-playing midfielder as opposed to an out-and-out winger. Just for the role, I was playing on the wing under him, but the way that he got, the way the rotation works, you'd pick up different positions and I did become more of a midfielder than an out-and-out winger there. But I just really, like, again, like I say, the way that he, I mean, I found out that while he went out of a job, he went through to Spain to study how the Spanish kept the ball so well. And he implemented that straight away. The season when he took over, we were dead and buried in the Championship. And I mean, rock bottom. We had to win something like 6 out of the last 8 or something in order to have any chance of staying up. And he came in at that point and we did that. And he got us instantly playing really good football. And then I think, like I say, the following season, then we got off to a flying start. And it were only due to unfortunate injuries in certain positions. The downside to the system that he played was everybody needed to be singing off the same hymn sheet. And if you had one position that weren't doing that, it kind of breaks down a little bit. And we got an injury and we had no one really there to fill the slot. And it just snowballed a little then, which again were disappointed for me because he left on sort of poor terms with the Millwall fans. But he was someone that I really, really got a lot out of personally. He fetched a lot of other stuff into the club, which I benefited from massively, outside the box, sort of with sports psychology stuff and things like that, which I really bought into. I really enjoyed and grasped that. So the whole thing for me there, it'd be between those two for different reasons.
I think we really appreciate you for coming on, Martin, and telling us your story, because there was definitely a story behind yourself.
Not an issue at all. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me on. I hope it goes down well. Like I say, I'm pretty much an open book now. There's nothing to hide or shirk around. It is what it is. I look back at my career and even the time at Sheffield United. I mean, at Sheffield United, I got probably the second highlight of my career as a Man United fan originally. I got to play at Old Trafford. So there's definitely some really, really good memories to look back at Sheffield United in and amongst the sort of few disappointments. So for me, yeah, thanks for inviting me on, and like I say, I hope it goes down well for the fans. So yeah, thank you very much.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.